This season of The Witch Wave is brought to you in part by Black Phoenix Alchemy Lab. Black Phoenix Alchemy Lab is a fragrance house specializing in body and household blends with a dark, romantic, gothic tone. Over the years, they've collaborated with some of my very favorite creative visionaries, including Neil Gaiman, Jim Jarmusch, the Jim Henson Company, and most recently, Junji Ito. They continually return to inspirations drawn from witchcraft, paganism, and mythology, and they also have a sister store called Twilight Alchemy Lab, which creates oils blended and consecrated specifically for ritual use. The lab recently released their annual Halloween perfume collection, a limited edition series which includes scents inspired by folklore accounts of lycanthropy. Customer reviews of their products can be found at the fan-run BPAL.org web forum, and you can check out all of their perfumes and other enchanting concoctions over at BlackPhoenixAlchemyLab.com. Would you like even more Witch Wave? Do you wish that you could hear from me and my other magical guests on a weekly basis? And what about doing monthly rituals with yours truly? Then come join me over on Patreon, where you'll get bi-weekly bonus Witchwave Plus episodes, ad-free Witchwave episodes, and detailed show notes for all. I also lead a monthly online magical workshop, which you can attend live or watch the recording of at your convenience. Rewards for some tiers also include magical merch and contests where you can win witchly prizes each month, as well as early heads up about my other workshops before they sell out. And you can even sign up for the opportunity to work with me one-on-one. And all backers get access to our exclusive digital coven where you can connect to a community of other wonderful Witchwave witches around the world. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to patreon.com/witchwave now and sign up. It's a magnificent way to get more magic in your life and to support the show. Thanks so much.
The world is filled with bewitching people, and you might be one too. Welcome to the podcast where art is magic, magic is real, and reality is stranger than dreams. I'm Pam Grossman, and this is The Witch Wave.
Hello, and welcome to the Witch Wave. Legend alert! We have an absolute icon in the house because on today's episode, I get to speak with none other than the feminist surrealist artist, Penny Slinger. Penny has been making magical art since the late 1960s, but is currently experiencing a resurgence now that she's in her late 70s. Now, one of my favorite things to do on this podcast is to give flowers to the elders and trailblazers whose shoulders so many of us stand on. And so speaking with Penny today meant so much to me, and I know that you are going to love hearing what she has to say. But it also got me thinking about how damaging the Wunderkind stereotype can be and the way in which we worship youth and early success, and then talk about middle age and senior years as being somehow diminished, particularly for women, though certainly people of all genders have some version of that narrative. despite seeing so many people in pop culture who have hit the big time when they were young or walked right out of college or some young scene and got early success, in my actual experience, I know so many people who didn't really come into their own until later in life, whether that's regarding their career, their creativity, their spirituality, or even in their erotic lives. I won't tell tales out of school, but I happen to know some people my age and older who are just starting to come into their sexual power and are finally learning how to express and satisfy their desires, and I find them so inspiring. The thing about the archetype of the witch is that there are so many versions of her, from the temptress to the hag. And if you look at images of witches from the late 15th century and early 16th century, I'm thinking about Albrecht Dürer's engraving Witch Riding Backwards on a Goat, for example, the older witches are often shown naked, and their bodies are supposed to be either horrific or comical or some combination of the two. We're supposed to look at these images of naked witches and think, ugh, old women are hideous. And that for them to show their naked bodies or to seem like they have any sort of desire is shameful or sinful or just plain silly. And that those kinds of women, older women who want things, are therefore witches and not the good kind. That threatening, undesirable, scary kind. In modern paganism, we've started to see a reclamation of the older version of the witch archetype. We have the triple goddess, which is the maiden, the mother, and the crone. But as I'm deepening into my own life, I am longing for more images of witches and women who are older and aspirational, who are powerful and wise and shameless in their wanting, whatever form that want may take. And so I am so thrilled to speak with Penny Slinger, whose work and life offer alternative images and narratives about femininity, sexuality, power, magic, and aging. But before we get to that, first, let's check and see what's come through on the Witch Wire.
Who is it?
Witches.
Hi, Pam. This is Sherry calling from Boston. I want to say thank you, first of all, for the Witch Wave and all of the beautiful light you shed over the creative witches of today. It's always so inspiring. My question for you is about aging and aging into beauty, as I would like to think of it. You are so open about, you know, talking about your own age, as you should be, as we all should be, unashamed of getting older. I have found witchcraft to be a beautiful way to kind of get around the isms of society. So capitalism, for example, as you talk about, and finding our own way forward and our own truth. And ageism, of course, is one of the many isms that we struggle against. So, yeah, I would love to hear about, you know, do you have any rituals that you do for yourself to help you embrace aging and feel beautiful at any age? Are there any archetypes that you would point to? You know, Baba Yaga comes to mind, but of course, she bears the trope of the old, wizened, scary-looking hag witch. So are there some examples of, you know, moon-haired, beautiful goddesses and other archetypes, other examples that I could look to as I, you know, start to find signs of aging and learn how to embrace them. Thank you.
Hi, Sherry. What a gorgeous message. Thank you so much for your kind words and for your excellent question. So yes, I am 43 and I tell people my age for my sake as its own kind of protection spell. It's apotropaic magic against shame. And it's not that I don't sometimes feel insecurity or self-consciousness or even fear in certain moments about aging. But I just refuse to let those feelings and messages cause me to shrink or get quieter or disappear altogether. And let me be real with you, I absolutely have moments where I lament about my aging eyes and my crow's feet. Though, come to think of it, crow's feet is actually a very witchy name for those wrinkles, just saying. And I'm definitely getting more moon-haired, as you so beautifully call it, with each passing day. And in my case, I've chosen not to dye my hair, so I'm getting more silver streaks there. But you know what? I reserve the right to change my mind at any time, as I say about all appearance adjustments that anyone may decide to do. I try not to have too much judgment about those things. But for now, I am going au naturel in a lot of ways. And for me, it feels important to try to let myself do this for myself and also to be an image of a person who's entered middle age and who is not, you know, doing major adjustments to my face and who accepts herself as she is aging. And again, there are some days it's hard to do and some days it's easier to do. My algorithm, like yours probably does, hounds me with eye creams and face creams and cosmetics and hair thickening serums and weight loss schemes and all the fucking things. Advertising targets our vulnerabilities and our demographics. I accidentally typed that as demon graphics, so lots to unpack there. But its whole purpose is to sell us shit and to make us feel less than so that we buy things. And advertising has always been like this, and the media has always been like this, but it feels like it's escalated with these targeted algorithmic ads and with the proliferation of so many people who are sharing so many images of themselves online, many of which are retouched and filtered, not all of them. Some of them are just really hot young people, right? And good for them, more power to them. But it's a lot to contend with. And I think it's a lot for people, as I said, of all genders and certainly all ages. And I'm not immune to it. I sometimes absolutely cave and buy the cream or the concealer or whatever Instagram is trying to sell me. But I also am very mindful about trying to please myself. I cloak myself in clothing and jewelry and yes, lipstick that all make me feel vibrant and powerful and beautiful on my own terms. So that's one way I try to combat it. Because what I know to be true is that I have never felt more free, more in control of expressing and meeting my own desires than I feel now at this age of 43. And all of that has come with experience. It has come with building confidence and getting more comfortable with who I am, even as I mourn some of the physical attributes that are changing and will continue to change. And absolutely, there is the crone archetype or the wise woman archetype of the witch, and they both inspire the fuck out of me. But I'm also not quite there yet. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm an old soul, so I've always been like 188 years old. But you know what I mean, I haven't gone full hag yet. And I don't want to yet, although I really do want that hag sweater that Batsheva has just put out. I don't know if you saw their recent runway show at Fashion Week in New York. It was all older women as the models, and one of them had this amazing sweater that said hag on it, and I just covet it so much. But yeah, it's hard to find a lot of celebrated images of women and witches who are in middle age. And I want to find richness and beauty and meaning during this phase of my life. And I want to be those things. So that is what I'm trying to cultivate. And on my best days, I think about it like this. I am becoming less interested in what people's opinions are of me than I am interested in my own curiosity about the world. I am trying to become more outward facing. I'm more interested in making things, in thinking things, in being, in doing, than I am at being perceived and judged. Of course, I still want to be beautiful. I want to feel beautiful. I want to be desired at times, but that's not all I want. I want to make magic and make meaningful work that hopefully helps people or touches them or inspires them to find more magic and wonder in their lives. And sometimes I have moments of anxiety about this, especially fueled by this photo-driven algorithm that literally incentivizes us to show pictures of our own faces. Like, you literally get more engagement and more clicks when you share photos of yourself on social media. It's how the algorithm is designed. It's kind of sinister. But in order for me to reach my audience or more of my audience, I do intentionally sometimes share pictures of myself, more pictures of myself than I probably would otherwise. And that makes me feel a lot of conflicting feelings. It certainly makes me more self-conscious because I'm watching myself age in real time over the course of my feed, as many of us are. And it also, to be really vulnerable and honest, sometimes makes me worried that I'm gonna disappoint people when they meet me in person. Because look, I don't use Facetune or filters or stuff that changes how I look, but I do have enough vanity to choose pictures that are at flattering angles or nice lighting. And so you're definitely getting this curated version of me, as we are of so many people on the internet. And I know theoretically people understand that, and yet occasionally I fret that once people meet me in person, that they will be let down or disappointed. So see, I'm not immune to these insecurities, but I also know that my audience isn't just coming to me because of my face. Like literally, you can't see it right now, right? You're here because something in you appreciates what's coming from inside me. And so what I look like is irrelevant. But I also think it's important to not hide as I'm getting older and to trust that me and my work, even if it's not for everybody, and what is, it's for somebody. And it certainly is valuable for me. And so on my very best days, I think about what I do as an offering to the world, an offering to spirit, and that if I'm given the gifts of certain skills and the gift of time on this earth, in this body, with this face, in this lifetime, that I don't want to squander that on just wasting so much time on self-doubt or self-censorship, or frankly, self-abuse, right? Because I can be really mean to myself in my darkest moments. Now, in terms of who I look to, I absolutely have some crone goddesses and such on my altar and around our space, but I also did something recently which has been even more potent for me lately, which is I started a kind of digital altar via Pinterest and made a Pinterest board, which I called Mages of the Ages, and it's filled with photos of women who are older than me, who I admire and adore. People like Isabella Rossellini and Patti Smith and Betty Saar and Tilda Swinton. And I'm going to keep adding to it because looking at it is medicine for me. And it reminds me that there are women out there who are as vibrant and stylish and cool and smart and artful and interesting. And yes, I think sexy as they always have been, maybe even more so because of who they are and how they let themselves shine, no matter how they have aged. And anyone who disagrees with that has shitty taste anyway, right? Like, ultimately, you know, people who don't like us are their own filtration system. Because if they don't like what we are putting out, they are not for us anyway. And so I try to remind myself of that too, especially as I age. And the last thing is I get to talk to older people on this show, people like today's guest, who just inspire the fuck out of me and who deserve the spotlight and the mic. And I want to be part of celebrating them as often as I can. So I don't know if that answered your question really in terms of like rituals and magic. It's more about the magic I'm trying to bring to my perspective as I'm aging. But certainly, I think there are beautiful rituals you could come up with around self-love, around mirror gazing, around communing with a tree or a plant that just grows more beautiful and more rich and seasoned with the passing seasons. But for me, a lot of the spells I'm casting around aging are just about how I'm showing up in the world each and every day. Thank you so much for your message, and may we all remember how truly fortunate we are to get to age and to experience more of this enchanting, ever-inspiring life. Now, on to my guest. Penny Slinger is a Los Angeles-based artist whose work investigates the feminine, the magical, and the erotic. In the late 1960s, her encounters with the work of Max Ernst initiated an enduring involvement with both the surrealist movement and the medium of collage. In her groundbreaking publications such as 50% The Visible Woman of 1971 and An Exorcism, A Photo Romance of 1977, Slinger explored the images of woman through a series of often provocative photomontage self-portraits. And a new expanded edition of An Exorcism will be published by Fulgur Press later this year. Penny's studies of various divine feminine practices, including Tantra, led her to co-create the Secret Dakini Oracle deck in the 1970s, and that deck is still in print now, albeit under a different name, the Tantric Dakini Oracle deck. And she has continued to work with Dakini imagery over decades. Penny's work is in many international museum collections, including Tate Britain, and was recently included in Tate's exhibition, Women in Revolt. Other notable exhibitions showcasing Penny's work include The Dark Monarch at Tate Gallery St. Ives, and Angels of Anarchy at Manchester Art Museum, and countless solo shows around the world. She also recently collaborated with House of Dior, and as you'll hear, has many, many more projects in the works. Penny joined me from her studio in California via Zoom. Penny Slinger, welcome to the Witch Wave.
Thank you for having me.
I am so honored to have you. I'm such an admirer of your work, and I just can't thank you enough for taking the time. So, Penny, I want to begin by sort of rooting our listeners in your roots as a surrealist. I know that that's a word that is still very personal to you and feels very applicable to not only your art, but perhaps even your worldview. So can you talk a little bit about why surrealism is so meaningful and so enchanting for you?
Well, I'm glad you phrased it like that, because it's exactly how I see it. Yes, I did come into my fullness as an artist through the portal of recognizing surrealism, and particularly the work of Max Ernst in his collage works. And that helped me define who I am and who I want to be as an artist, but also who I am as a being. Mm. And one of my main thrusts, shall we say, throughout my life, and certainly now as I've reached this point in my life, and as I'm working on my archives and trying to cull all the experiences and weave all those threads together of my whole time on planet Earth, I see that my whole life has been governed by surrealist principles. And what are surrealist principles? Well, I'm not limiting myself to what André Breton might have said in his manifesto. Mm-hmm. I'm taking the principle of the idea of surrealism, above and beyond realism, something that is not just to do with what we see, but what goes on in the inner spaces of our psyches, of our worlds, which are so rich and full, and which this mundane pain often unrealized, all the magic and all the wonder that dreams are made of. Mm. So surrealism I see as a bridge between these worlds and as a refabricating of the world into one's own image and into one's own reality. So it gives you this opportunity to have a free hand in self-recreation and by the same token, recreating everything else that one sees in the light of imagination and wonder.
Ah, I'm already swooning, Penny, that it was so beautifully said. I want to dive a little deeper in terms of Max Ernst. I know that you studied him when you were a student and you were very inspired by particularly his collage books.
Yeah.
And I certainly see some of that influence on your earlier work. However, the difference that I see between you and he is that he was kind of using, you know, lots of found imagery, whereas you began by taking photographs of yourself and making these collages, often incorporating your own nude body and doing some really radical work to that end. So how did you decide to include yourself and particularly your body, but also all of yourselves in your own early work?
Well, interesting. When I was doing my research for my thesis, I knew I wanted to do something about the use of the human body, and particularly the female human body, because that's my human body, relevant to me, as a lens through which to connect everything else that one wants to express and experience. So I looked and I saw that it wasn't really just the representation of the human body as we see it, but much more the magical and symbolic way that the human can be seen. And you find that in ancient cultures and in Gnostic traditions and alchemical and in Eastern world. But there wasn't a lot that I saw in the Western canon and things leading more into our times that really reflected this kind of symbolic use of the human being. And then I came across Max Ernst's collage books, and it felt to me that he absolutely hit that nail on the head, that he was creating this mythology by recreating, taking pieces of what already is and mixing them up to create this dream landscape in which all these incredible beings inhabited, and they were hybrids, man and bird and beast and maiden and everything all mixed up together, mm-hmm. and then placed in these surreal contexts. So I thought this is absolutely the path that I want to take. And I see that surrealism is presenting this amazing toolkit for diving into those hidden realms and for dredging that and bringing that up and expressing it by the tools of collage and other surrealist techniques. So I thought this is just for me. And I also felt, because I love the inspiration, but I never want to be a copycat, I always want to do something new and groundbreaking. So I felt woman has, throughout the history of art, been a very focal subject.
Sure.
All the way through as the muse. And yet, how much do we see of woman presenting herself?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I want to be my own muse. And I want to show more about who I am than just surfaces. I want to look inside and use these disruptive techniques that surrealism and Dada offer to show the inner working. Mm-hmm. So my first book of collage, which I made as part of my thesis presentation, I thought, why don't I take these tools but use them for my own self-exploration and self-reinvention? And so my first book, called 50% The Visible Woman, was named that because I wanted to say, when you're seeing a woman, you're only seeing 50%. You're not seeing all the rest, and that's a generous amount. All the rest that's going on underneath the surface. So that's why I named it that.
Mm.
And then, yes, I did have photos taken of myself. Selfies weren't with so much a thing then. You needed someone else to take them for you.
Yes.
And my girlfriend and other photos that I took. And I also took very freely from anything I found in the popular culture and books and magazines and anything that I wanted to use as imagery to go with my own imagery and create these kind of what I call full frontal collages, which brought all these things together in a new relationship. So hopefully just shook up the whole notion of how a woman is seen and how she sees herself.
Hell yes. So when I think about the Surrealist movement, and I understand you are the next generation after them, but when I think of that movement, I think about how a lot of the Surrealists, particularly the men, to your point, they had these muse figures like La Femme Enfant or La Femme Sorcière, the innocent woman or the magical woman. But it was still about kind of otherizing the woman. And to your point, you're saying, I am worthy of being my own muse, of being this subject of my own art. And I wondered, was there any fear around that for you?
Well, I've always tended to be a little fearless in these things.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed pressing buttons. I've enjoyed shaking things up. And I didn't want, unfortunately, in our current culture, when everyone is so addicted to likes on our social media, it makes that desire to be likable maybe even stronger. But I don't think that's the friend of the artist. I don't think an artist should need to feel the desire to be liked. Because if we look at the history of art, those artists who have lived and breathed into generation after generation have generally not been really accepted at the time they first brought out the work. And that's the thing, because you're challenging the canons of what is already out there and trying to do something new. And usually the new is a little bit frightening to people. Mm-hmm. But for me, I love the new and I love the unexpected. And I like to walk on the wild side and the uncharted shores. And those are the places where you find most treasures.
Ah, exactly, exactly. Now, I understand that when you first started doing these collages, these self-portrait collages, this was in the late 60s and then throughout the 70s. And, you know, my art history knowledge reminds me that the second wave feminists were coming into the fore at this time. You have, in terms of the art movement, you start to see artists like a Judy Chicago or a Mary Beth Edelson. Were those artists contemporaries of yours, or were you each kind of working parallel but not really interacting? Like, how much of a movement or a scene were you aware that you were part of in the 70s?
It was so disconnected at that time because we didn't have the connective tissue of the internet. So although these things were going on, actually only now I'm discovering stuff that was happening at a time when I was making art that I had no idea about at all.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, one little anecdote is this 50%. I called my book that in 1969, but I didn't realize that over here in the States, women were having a movement where they were putting eggs in the museum and writing 50% on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea at all. So this is one of those kind of magical connections of this simultaneous arising of things and interpreted in different lenses, but that it was ideas that had come of age, really.
Yes.
But there wasn't any influence because I wasn't aware of what was happening over here on the West Coast at all.
Right. That's what I assumed. And how much were you influenced by some of my other favorite artists like Leonora Carrington and Remedios Varo and Leonor Feeney? Were those people that were North Stars for you, or was it more Max Ernst and the dudes?
Actually, it was really the dudes, and especially Max Ernst. He was my dude. But I had the feeling that I know there's been a little bit of criticism about Max Ernst from the sense of, oh, patriarchal, this, that, and the other. But I saw him as a much more fluid being in his creations. You know, his alter ego was Loblop, this bird.
Yes.
He was much more of a transforming being, not limited to either gender or human identity, as far as I was concerned. So mm-hmm. I saw him through that lens. And at that time, there wasn't as much information or appreciation of the female surrealists as there is now. And it took me to a few years ago to see this exhibition of Leonor Feeney in New York. And it was a wonderful exhibition at the Museum of Sex.
Yes.
That exhibition introduced me to her. I hadn't known all these dimensions of her. And seeing her speak and seeing her mask and having the video and having the clips, she was saying things that just echoed my own sentiment. And I left, I stayed in there for 3 or 4 hours. And I left there absolutely in love with her, an artist that I hadn't really appreciated before.
Yeah.
And then just on Friday, I was doing this talk about surrealist women. And one of the speakers was talking about her whole experience with Leonora Carrington. And through her words, I understood much more of Leonora Carrington's dimensions too. And all of this is actually supports the feeling that I am part of this magical lineage.
Yes.
And these Indian surrealists whose whole lives were crafted around being art. And when I wrote my own biosphere, I called my life as art. And now while I'm making my archives, I'm trying to bring everything together of my whole being as part of my expression as an artist. And I think this is what's been missing in the art world from our male artists. They don't think as holistically.
Mm-hmm.
It's the job of women now, and I'll take it upon myself quite readily because that's what I want to do, to present this living work of art, which is me, who has produced and expressed many totems of her creativity along the way, but has been a completely transforming art subject and object. Her whole life and everywhere I've lived and the relationships I've had all feed into what the nature of that creation is. So I think this is an extremely interesting study which needs to now be presented as how we can see an artist rather than the old way.
Absolutely. On that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The Witch Wave is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing that you would do if you had an extra hour in your day? Some of you might say go for a run or take a nap. For me, I actually had this conversation recently with my therapist about how I live in New York City, and yet I was feeling like all I was doing was working. I wasn't going out to see as much art as I used to before the pandemic. And after talking to her, I realized I really have to prioritize this because it is so good for my soul. It feeds my soul. But it was only through this conversation with my therapist that I was able to realize what was missing and then prioritize my schedule to make more time for it. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. And of course, the question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing, that replenishing thing, that delightful thing into your schedule is to figure out and know what's important to you and then make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Therapy has absolutely helped me prioritize what matters and what lights me up, and then has helped me strategize ways to make more time for those things. I cannot recommend therapy more highly because it is so helpful to have a person who is neutral. They're outside of your everyday, and yet your time with them is devoted towards figuring out what matters to you so you can live life with more meaning and hopefully more peace as well. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/witchwave today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/witchwave. This season of The Witch Wave is brought to you in part by Sphere and Sundry, an astro-magical atelier where you can get expertly elected materia magica, oils, incense, bath salts, salves, inks, beauty oils, and more, which have been ritually crafted during rare, powerful, and benefic astrological configurations. And oh my word, I can tell you firsthand, this is the stuff. These formulas are chosen in accord with the strict requirements of the talismanic tradition outlined in the Picatrix and other ancient grimoires, meaning you can benefit from the power of amazing astrological transits even when the stars haven't aligned.
These are incredible tools for witches who are looking to embrace the manifestations and results of their spell work, especially the Luna in Cancer series. And I myself have the Luna in Cancer incense, and it is a dream to use for any kind of lunar magic. Venus Materia can be used for love, glamour, and attraction. Regulus for fame and recognition, Asclepius for healing and transformation, and Deneb Algedi for protection. I also used several of Sphere and Sundry's magical products on site in Greece during our group rituals, and they were so potent and so exquisite. I can't say enough good things about them. Since 2018, Sphere and Sundry have been a key driver in the rising tide of popularity and interest in astrological magic, amassing over 5,000 five-star reviews and field reports on their website. Most orders ship within one business day, and Sphere and Sundry is also well known for their incredible customer service, as they are their magical results, and I can attest to that as well. Learn more and get $10 off your first order at sphereandsundry.com using the code WITCHWAVE. That's sphereandsundry.com, sphereandsundry.com, and use code WITCHWAVE for $10 off your first order.
Welcome back to the Witch Wave. Today I'm speaking with Penny Slinger. So, Penny, at some point on your own journey as an artist, you dive, at least from my perception, a bit more deeply or a bit more overtly into your own magic making and your own spiritual exploration. And I think what many listeners might know you most for is the Secret Dakini Oracle, which is this unbelievably lush, fantastical oracle deck for which you created all of the collaged artwork. But I know you've worked with those themes of magic and the divine feminine in lots of other bodies of work as well. So can you share a little bit about your journey into magic?
Yes. Well, I've always been interested in the unseen world, and I've always had experiences that have connected me to things beyond this dimension. So we'll put that in place to start with. And then to say surrealism, of course, encompasses a lot of magic in it. But I found it was the early 70s when I went to an exhibition at the Hayward Gallery in London of Tantra. And it was the first major exhibition of tantric art in that country. And I was absolutely blown away because when I walked in, I felt I recognized this world. I recognize this art. And it felt like the logical evolution of surrealism from dealing with the subconscious to dealing with like super consciousness. And the interesting thing was so much of the imagery was so similar. And that, you know, our worlds inside are very much a reflection of the spiritual reality. And so all of this became something that I wanted to embrace and find out more about in its essence, so that I could have some of this understanding in my life. And not least was the fact that here was a spiritual path, which I'd been looking for a while, and I've studied different spiritual paths, but I didn't want a spiritual path that was going to deny the truth of my own body. And of course, as we know, so much of our Judeo-Christian heritage, and also in the Islamic world, all of this is a very sex-negative aspect to it, because it's considered that these are sins of the flesh somehow, and our whole concept of original sin. Well, that felt to me nonsense. And when I discovered Tantra, here was not what we understand it as a lot nowadays, that it's come into the world as being the religion of sex. It's not the religion of sex. It just happens to be a spiritual path which includes sexuality in it, rather than excluding it. So it's letting one know that one can use all of that to see the body as a temple and to bring in all these celestial and divine energies into the body. Now I'm experiencing them and channel them and feel the magic of that interconnection. Mm. And so that's what I wanted for myself. So I would say since I discovered Tantra, and then came together with my partner, Nick Douglas, who was probably one of the most knowledgeable Westerners in the field and who had a guru and been initiated, all of these things. I got to be able to go in deeply to that, and I still consider myself to be primarily a tantrika, although I don't go around proclaiming it so much just because the whole wave of neo-tantra has diminished a little what tantra is, because it means to weave or to expand. Mm. And so as far as I'm concerned, it's a way that we weave together all the threads of our life and reality with our spiritual selves and create this fabric of being, and we expand into our multidimensional selves. So it's about potential and about living out one's full potential and having permission through a spiritual lineage to own and do this. And it's very goddess-centric, because in the spiritual parts, often the feminine is seen of all of nature and all that is, and then the masculine is the spirit, and then the two together are what create everything, all that is. So by recognizing the goddess and the fact that she is, I believe, very much on the rise now, and we need to reclaim her as our own, we are reclaiming ourselves. We are reclaiming our own bodies. We are reclaiming our world itself as being sacred. And that, I think, is the key.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit more deeply about this oracle deck. I think some listeners, because this is a podcast where we talk about a lot of different magical paths, I don't know that we've talked very deeply about Tantra. So can you just give a little primer on what Dakini are?
Well, I love Dakinis because they're one of the rare beings in the spiritual pantheon who are able to move between the realms. Mm. And they're like messengers, therefore. And their mission statement is to enlighten and liberate all sentient beings. So they appear in this world, and sometimes that Dakini energy inhabits physical women, and they are there to shake up the status quo and to bring a new understanding. And they're shown as naked because they represent the naked truth, and their ornaments all represent just a certain function that they have in that awakening process. So I think that they are excellent beings, if we're looking at spiritual beings, to work with and to engage with, because they're so approachable in that sense. And because I believe that we can request, and if we're eligible, get to experience their direct Dakini energy in ourselves as our own awakening.
Mm. And so my understanding is that there's 64 of these beings. And is it correct that each one sort of is responsible or representative of a different kind of energy?
In the Hindu pantheon, there are yoginis rather than Dakinis, but I've used those two rather interchangeably. Mm. I didn't want to use the term yogini only because I thought people would associate it too much with hatha yoga and physical yoga, which is only one aspect of yoga, because yoga really means to yoke or to join. So again, it's a way of connecting with spiritual energies, connecting with the divine. But I thought Dakini, which both of them are to do with the manifestation of feminine wisdom principles. So they represent a wisdom and an embodiment of wisdom. And there are certain temples in India, in Orissa, that occurred around the 9th through 11th centuries particularly, which are the yogini temples. And these yoginis have different numbers, but very often 64. And those 64 beings, 64 beautiful, sacred, divine, feminine archetypes are in a circle around, and they are all representing, yes, aspects. And they vary. The different temples have slightly different yogini forms, and some are animal-headed or bird-headed. They are surreal, and they are tantric. They're all of it. And when I first saw the photos of the temples, when I met with Nick Douglas, and he'd been on pilgrimage there, and he showed me the photos, I was like, yes, I need to make something for our times that is a version of what this energy system is, and this embodiment is just so exquisite. I want to be part of it. And so we made together this set of cards, which came out as the secret Dakini oracle. It came out later again as the tantric Dakini oracle with the same publisher. But we took that 64 system and translated it into something similar to the tarot, but we didn't have hierarchies in the arcanas. And we did have, you know, similarities and resonance with various archetypes that were in the traditional oracle system of like the tarot. I have incidentally since made another version, because it's so important to me, another version called 64 Dakini Oracle, which is, I've been up online since 2010, and hopefully in the next year will come out as a card deck with the book. And this is really more like a sort of initiation system than just a day-to-day oracle, because each particular one of the 64 here, I fully manifested as a divine being. And I went through a process bringing different women into my studio in Northern California and having them channel these goddess energies and then film them and photograph them. And these have become these 64 Dakinis, and each with their own special messages, which I hope to bring out beyond the website that they've been on for a while, but to bring out so people can own them and use them and work with them.
How gorgeous. Yes. And I saw some of those images online. I love to know that you're still working with this system. And just so listeners are aware, when we're talking about the deck that you designed originally has 65 cards because you wanted to organize it sort of like you envisioned it as this wheel around the self. And so there's a card that represents the self, essentially. And one of the things I love about this deck, in addition to it being so beautiful, is it's very playful. So you have certain cards that have the equivalent in the major arcana of tarot, but you have different names for them. So instead of the lovers, you have a card called Wish Fulfilling Gem. And the star, you have a name called Island of Jewels. And these aren't exact one-to-one representatives. It feels like you're sort of making these analogies to these energies. But then you have cards that are completely of your own imaginal space, such as the Cosmic Carrot. You have Horseplay, the Rose Garden. And my understanding is that a lot of those cards are about elemental energies. And then you have these final three cards that are past, present, and future. So it really is this whole other kind of holographic system. And I would just love to hear a little bit more about how you developed that.
Well, we made the cards and we made them very intuitively without thinking. And we would do readings for people and I would just channel what would come through for me at that time. And they worked. And because they worked, that's when we thought, well, maybe we should try and bring them out. And then we took them to US Games and Systems, which was the biggest tarot card production company that we knew of in the world. And magically, we got a meeting and did a reading for the owner. And I thought, my goodness, how can this work for us now? But then it did. Although we had abundance in the head, the golden cup overflowing, which I thought was a very good sign.
Yes.
The death card in the heart. And I was, oh no, this may not be good for us. But he decided he wanted to do it. And then afterwards we found out that just at that moment, his father was dying.
Oh.
You know, a reflection of his inner world in his heart, obviously.
Mm.
We said we would do it with him. And he said, on the condition that we did a book where we made the comparisons with the traditional tarot. So we thought, okay, let's give it a shot. And when we went back, it just all fell into place as if pre-designed. And instead of having the four suits, we had each suit was a different element. So all those cards you were talking about just now, like the Rose Garden, would be in the earth element. And so all these different frequencies and energies were put into the grouping of elements. As an alchemist, I've been working with those all my life. So that was good. And what you say about the lightness and the humor, this is another thing which I feel has been very significant to me as a woman, as a survivor of life, and also as a magical being, humor. And I've tried to absolutely infuse that into my work. And many of my titles are innuendos and have the humor in them, because I felt that the lightness of touch is so important, especially when you're dealing with very heavy and dense material, that if you can keep humor and that ability to laugh at yourself throughout, it's actually often the very much a saving grace and the only way you can get through the dark and dense times that we all have to get through in life.
Yes, I have this phrase I use probably far too often, which is reverent irreverence. Like, that's sort of my attitude towards life, or at least I try to cultivate that attitude as much as possible. And so when I was reviewing the deck in preparation for this interview, I realized that you begin with the Joker, and you say one of the explanations in the booklet is that it's the importance of maintaining humor in all situations as a hotline to understanding all situations in life. And then the last card in the deck is the last laugh, which is the future. And you describe it as a giant disembodied laughing mouth rises above the implement of execution, symbolizing spirit liberated by its own humor. The image is this mouth floating above this executioner's axe. And I was like, this is so perfect. You begin with humor, you end the cycle in humor, and obviously in an Ouroboros-like way, it's all eternal. But it just, it delighted me so much, Penny, and it just seemed like such a powerful through line for you and this deck and your work in general.
Yes, yes, it has been. And I think, too, it also as a surrealist and Dadaist, that, you know, turning the world on its head is part of the practice. And if you can't do that with humor, then you're really in bad shape. And that last half card, that's my mouth, by the way. And so I know that executioner's chopper is going to come for me one day because no one escapes it. There we are. We might as well keep that buoyancy to our spirit as the spice of life and the champagne in our drama.
Yes, yes. Penny, where does this come from in you? I mean, I look at the scope of your life and I think of you as someone who was making, you know, radical feminist art, some of it very explicit. I would call it erotic. I know some other people might even say pornographic, although, you know, that's debatable. I don't see it that way. And you have this fearlessness, you have this real zest for life, this penchant for laughter and joy, as you're also diving into very serious topics. Were you raised this way, or is this all rebellion from an upbringing that wasn't a good fit for you?
Well, I would say when I was young, I spent a lot of time rebelling against my situation. And of course, I identified for a long time my whole family and everything with representing this bourgeois boxed-in reality that I was trying to escape from. And in the sense that they were typical middle-class family, all of those things, that is true. Only as I got older, and luckily I realized that before my parents passed, I realized just all the fine qualities that I did inherit from them that I completely shunned and denied before, because I was so busy trying to rebel against everything that was, because I wanted to create something different.
Yeah.
And I don't in any way take back my feeling that there was a lot of grayness and shut-inness that I absolutely had to explode from. But I would say that sense of humor actually was something that particularly my father had. And my mother too, she was able to turn things positive, just from her good positive attitude. And she had breast cancer at one point, and she had a breast removed. And the doctor afterwards, in fact, said, you know, your mother helped so many people in the world through her positive attitude. And this is the thing. So I did inherit those things, and I acknowledge and appreciate that. Everything's a mixed bag, isn't it? It's not less black and white.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I wish we had like 15 more hours so we could talk about all of your different phases. But for the sake of the time that we do have, I'd love to take us to the present. It seems to me, Penny, as if you are experiencing, I don't know if the word renaissance is the right word here, because I know you've been making art this whole time, but it feels like your work is in so many different amazing exhibitions. I know you have work at the Tate right now. I've been part of so many different surrealist surveys, and it feels like you're busier than ever. You did work with Dior recently. How are you feeling at this stage of your life as an artist, as a woman? I mean, you can interpret that however which way you like.
Oh, thank you. Yes, this is an interesting place now because I am having this comeback, because literally I did come back. I went away, and I didn't go away from creating art. I just went out of the radar of the art world as such. So when I left to go to America to work on Sexual Secrets book with the publisher, that was the first step. And then from there, we went to the Caribbean, where I lived for 15 years and had a whole other kind of creative life. I did a whole series of paintings on the now almost extinct Arawak Indians and studied indigenous culture, which I also thought was a really important part of looking at the feminine and what that means in our relationship to the world. And then I came to Northern California and spent, you know, 20 odd years there doing mainly sacred ritual performance art with myself and many, many others. Now, then I got in 2009, the start of me coming back to some kind of relationship with the fine art world. I thought that I could make my own imprint without being part of it. But then I realized after this 30 years, if you're not around, you're not in the history books. You have to play the game somehow. So I came back in and I'm still way from being where I would like to be in terms of what I want to present to the world. But I am working on my archives so that I'm trying to do all the work that I can to bring this richness of the journey that I've had as an artist, which I do know is quite unique because I've traveled many paths which most artists, especially if they become successful, don't really get an opportunity to travel. I remember talking to successful artists when I was younger, and they said, well, the problem is once a gallery takes you, they want you to do more of the same.
Yes.
So I had in my life that freedom to express myself in different ways. And so there are now many what we might call the lost years where I was exploring all of this work which hasn't been brought into the fine art world yet. So I'm working on this big integration, and hopefully I'll be able to do that through the archives and through what I've got a book coming out later this year called A Muse Unto Herself. Self-penned monograph where I'm giving at least broad sweeps of this journey. And then I hope to get the opportunity to really flesh this out, because as I go through the archives, there's so much. And I have really reinvented myself many, many times. But I think this is a wonderful blueprint. And I want to share that because, as I was talking about Tantra, meaning to expand and to weave, you know, I've expanded into all these various aspects of myself and tried to live all these lifetimes in one, if you like. And I was told by an astrologer earlier, it's not an easy life, but it's an incredibly rich. And I would say my existence has been and continues to be very rich. And I want to share the riches.
Absolutely. On that note, we're going to take another quick break and we'll be right back. This episode of The Witch Wave is brought to you by Woodland Magic. Hand-poured in small batches by an escaped academic turned candle maker, Woodland Magic candles are deeply inspired by nature, folklore, mythology, and literature. And I'm here to tell you, they look and smell so divine. Immerse yourself in a dark forest with candles like The Woods, Forest Floor, and Black Philip. You know I love that one. Or conjure the magic of ancient goddesses with Persephone's pomegranates, Athena's familiar, and the Kaliach. If you're a bookish witch, you'll love their literature-inspired volumes of forgotten lore, Carmilla, and The Priory. And all Woodland Magic candles are made with 100% soy wax and non-toxic fragrances, and they're available at awoodlandmagic.com. That's awoodlandmagic.com. And best of all, orders of $60 or more come with free shipping, and WitchWave listeners receive 10% off their orders with code WITCHWAVE10. So head on over to awoodlandmagic.com, use code WITCHWAVE10 for 10% off, and get free shipping for orders of $60 or more. Hi, Witch Wavers. I have exciting news. At long last, we have some new Witch Wave merch available for you now through TeePublic. We decided to go with TeePublic for our new Witch Wave merch because it is a print-on-demand site, which means you can get different variations of the Witch Wave logo printed on t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, magnets, notebooks. Oh my gods, the sky's the limit.
And the shirts come in different styles and fabrics and colors and are available in sizes small through 5XL, so you can order whatever you'll feel your most magical in. So head on over to witchwavepodcast.com/shop.
Welcome back to the Witch Wave. Today I'm speaking with Penny Slinger. So Penny, we're talking about where you're at in your life now, in your career, and you had a wonderful interview with the Surrealist magazine, The Debutante, in which you said, "In my current work, I am attempting to smash through this barrier of ageism, which is in force, particularly for the female of the species. It is the next bastion for feminism."
Yeah.
And I would love to hear you expand upon that. I just turned 43 recently, and I am always looking toward people who are aging with magic and vivid vibrancy and grace. And so anything you care to share about how you're feeling about aging and how it's represented and how you're experiencing it, I would just love to hear.
Oh, thank you again, because this is obviously a really important subject. And for many years, I knew that I would want to do something about what happens when you get older. Then I came to this point, and so now I'm doing it. And it seems that the culture is so robbed of having the riches of the wise woman, that by turning away from our elders, putting them aside rather than, like in tribal culture, for instance, putting them in the center, in the heart of the tribe, and listening to their wisdom and their guidance, honoring and respecting them, allows for all that to percolate back into society and to help evolve. And I see this as a devolutionary thing, that we don't actually respect and give much of a platform to our elders. And as a woman in particular, I saw myself becoming invisible again. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked on being a visible woman from the inside out. And now I didn't want to become invisible when my inner riches and my beauty has not diminished. It's just I'm not that young, hot, magnetic female entity anymore. I have matured. But like a fine wine, there's so much richness here that can be shared and I believe needs to be shared. So in my recent works, I've been using my own body now at this age, well, I'm now 77.
Mm.
Sunset strip. And I have stripped and I am in LA and I am showing my naked body now as my body of experience. And this particular project called My Body has many facets. During the pandemic, I used my body as my body in a box because we were all put in boxes and I tried to express in pretty much real time all the things we were going through. And then I have another series as yet unshown, but hopefully we will change that, of life-size my bodies melded with different creatures, with animals and birds, and trying to help us understand that these are spiritual beings with personality and feelings too, and making that offering in a new surreal and tantric melange that I've been doing, and then various other themes that I'm working out.
Oh, I cannot wait to see all of that. Do you have any anxiety around taking photographs of yourself at the age of 77 and sharing, or is it the same feeling as when you were younger, just like, fuck it, this is me and I want to share it? And does it feel scary at all?
Well, my body has aged, but it's still the same body. I'm still this same blueprint. So I don't feel any shame around it and have never felt shame about my body. So that's a lucky thing.
That is so lucky, Penny. If you could bottle that and send it to me in the mail, I would drink it right up.
So I'm hoping that it can be a tincture, a little alchemy again that
yes.
can go out and can nourish people from the inner part of themselves that knows their own inner beauty. And I did a project recently called Playpen with a photographer, Polly Borland, and that was very much about re-seeing the muse in terms of body images. And she isn't as old as me, but she has, more flesh, and she's not someone who's felt that happy about how her body is. But we did this whole series of crazy, wild presentations. She's done that to other people in her photography, but we did it on her. And it's just showing that the muse is all about constantly reinventing yourself. And that's what anyone can do. So it's not limited to how you look, but who you are.
Oh, exactly. Hear, hear. Now, as you know, this podcast is called The Witch Wave. The identity of the witch and the archetype of the witch is very, very important to me and very personal. And I wondered what your relationship is to that word, to that identity, and so on.
Well, a little bit like feminism. I never wanted to be called a feminist because I didn't feel very in line with the way that feminism was coming out at the time when I was kind of coming into the world, because it was much more to do with a more militant idea, and they weren't so sympathetic with wanting to show the body or have that kind of body consciousness. And for me, I wanted the whole package. I wanted to be recognized for who I was or myself, not to have to lose out on a lot of the good parts.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do that. And the same thing in a different way with witch. I never really wanted to be called witch because of the bad association with witchcraft. But now I accept both happily because I feel we're at a time where we're expanding the parameters of how these terms are used and that we need to seize these terms and to rebrand them with our own energy. And I am certainly the good witch of the West. And my difference from what I would call witchery that I didn't so much align with is when they talk in the credos about controlling spirits and getting them to do your will. I've never really believed in controlling anyone or anything on any dimension.
Same.
I just want to create a nice, inviting atmosphere that if they want to participate, they are free to do so. So that's how I see my kind of witchery.
Yes, consenting familiars. I love that. Now, I would love to hear just about your creative process. When you're making work, does it feel like a magical or spiritual process for you?
Well, I'm constantly creating work in my mind's eye. I'm constantly receiving imagery. So I would say my whole being is generally a crucible where magical alchemy is occurring a lot of the time. And then when you manifest, you're trying to use the tools that are either goddess-given or that you've honed and crafted in your experience so that you can try and bring something of the richness of these visions and this magic into reality, this manifestation process. So the whole thing's magical, isn't it? I mean, creation is magical, and that's why we like to do it. And on one level, nothing's new under the sun. And another, by the same token, everything is fresh and vibrant and self-creating and able to be just generated as a piece of this wonderful fabric that we are weaving with our creative thoughts and our creative actions. And that thought precedes form, but it's really wonderful as we are beings in a material world to try and create something material out of that consciousness and out of what one sees in the mind's eye.
Yes. Well, you strike me as an extremely wise person, Penny. And I don't ask a lot of my guests this, but I would love to ask you if you'll indulge me. We're at this really intense precipice, I think, as a world. There's so much darkness. There's a lot that I know people are feeling fearful and anxious about. Do you have hope as well for the future? What is your outlook on where we're at and where we're headed?
Well, I think if we don't have hope, we don't have anything. And I feel that that hope is just has to be intrinsically in the consciousness that is in any way evolved or realized, because what's the opposite? Hopelessness. Who wants hopelessness in any dimension?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not an acceptable solution, to be hopeless. So, of course, we embrace hope, but that needs to be some kind of active engagement not a passive one. So as we hope there, we should put our intentions, put our consciousness, and look to a wisdom of our hearts to guide us rather than the mistaken idea of trying to work with power as if it's something we must seize and jealously guard. No, we must come to the power of the heart and the compassion and the empathy and all those things which join us with others and join us with spirit, because we can't really do this on our own right now. We've come to a point where we sort of, you know, muddied the waters rather a lot as a human race. So we need a bit of divine help. And that's why I think it's a time to turn to the goddess, because her heart is so vast and she loves her creation so much. So it is time to work together with her, if everybody can just open up their hearts to their own inner wisdom, which is a reflection of her wisdom, once they just get everything else out of the way.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Penny, in our final moments together, I know that my listeners are going to want to know what is next for you. How can they see more of your artwork? What do you have coming up that you're excited to share?
I have two books that are coming out this year. One I mentioned before, A Muse Under Herself, which is being published by Hatton Beard over here in the States and out in England too, and that'll be later this year. And then in June, I have the release of a different version of an exorcism from one we've seen before. I don't say new in the sense that I actually crafted it in the late 70s, but it wasn't released because the publisher who was going to do it put out Mountain Ecstasy, another of my collage books before that, and that was seized and burned by British Customs. And so therefore, we're on a witch show. What do you expect? I said, lucky it wasn't me this time. Anyway, they seized all those books and burnt them. So this version of an exorcism didn't come out. And for those not familiar, an exorcism is this photo romance that I crafted over a 7-year period from 69, and it was published in 1977, which is set in an old mansion house in the countryside, and features myself and my then partner filmmaker, Peter Whitehead, and my girlfriend Sue going through this whole exploration of self that I did in a death and rebirth.
It is so gorgeous, Penny. It's one of my favorite. I mean, I could say that about most of your work. It's my favorite, but it truly is one of my favorite works that you've done. It's incredible.
Well, thank you. I'm adding another dimension to this because this version has twice as many images as the published version, and it has a text. So the text is a kind of prose poetry which accompanies the images and allows one to go just a little deeper on this journey and this understanding, hopefully, but in a poetic way rather than as anything didactic or informational, just to take us into this space of self-reflection and out of the darkness into the light.
Oh my goodness. Penny, how can I hang on to my vitality and my spirit the way you have as I enter into later years? I mean, you are just so inspiring and so energizing to talk to.
Well, I think the secret is just in believing in being yourself, and that self just gets enriched by this experience here. It doesn't in any way get diminished. So that's the thing to hang on to. And then you can just be a fountain that's overflowing with that isness. You did ask me about, I'm having an exhibition in London.
Oh, yes.
For anyone who might be in London, of this exorcism material, and we're going to do it as an immersive exhibition. And that's going to be at Richard Sultan Gallery, opening on the 2nd of July for a couple of months. That will coincide with the book coming out and hopefully give people the opportunity to feel many dimensions of this world.
Oh my goodness. Well, Penny Slinger, I am just in awe of your isness, and I am so grateful to you for sharing your wisdom, your magic, and your time with me today on The Witch Wave. Thank you so much, Penny. This was such an honor.
Thank you so much, and blessings to all those witches out there. Keep the spells away, but keep your heart along the way.
I love that.
That's it for the show.
Thank you again to Penny Slinger for sharing her sacred surrealism with me. Do you have questions, feedback, need some witchly advice, or just want to share something magical that happened to you recently? Please do drop us an email or a voice memo at witchwavepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and you just might make it on the Witchwire. The Witch Wave is a Phantasmophile production written and produced by me, Pam Grossman. This episode was recorded and edited by Josh Wilcox and/or Walter Nordquist and myself. Our theme music is the song Hand and Eye by Lycanthia. Our new Witchwave logo was designed by Thunderwing. And special thanks, as always, go to Matt Freeman, Laura Antal, and Cece Pascal. You can check out information about this and other episodes on our website and now buy Witchwave merch over at witchwavepodcast.com. Please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, and do consider giving us lots and lots of sparkly stars and glowing reviews. It really, truly does make a difference and helps other people find the show. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at WitchWavePod, and you can check out my witch emoji for iPhone by going to witchemoji.com or downloading it in the App Store. My book, Waking the Witch, is available everywhere now, and the witchcraft book I edited and co-authored for Toshin is as well, so thank you for checking those out too. And if you want more Witchwave, or you would just like to support the show, please do join us over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/witchwave. Thank you so much for listening. Witches are the future. I'll catch you next time on the Witchwave.